This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Senator Kirk Talbot joins us right out of the box here this morning. He has Senate Bill 419. They are talking about creating a gun-free zone in the French Quarter. Senator, welcome to the show.
Hi, Noel. Thanks for having me.
So I know we haven't had any. Where do we stand? It doesn't look like that we've advanced the bill at all right now. Are you still trying to bring parties together to try and reach compromise as it relates to this bill?
Yeah, I mean, let me just state that we're not trying to create a gun, quote unquote, gun-free zone in the French Quarter. What we really want to do is just keep it permit carry only in the French Quarter.
Right.
And really the first five blocks of Bourbon Street. The whole, if you're looking at a map of the French Quarter, the whole eastern side of the French Quarter is already gun-free zones because of their schools there. And, you know, they have, that 1,000-yard, I think, or radius of where you can't carry a gun within a school. And so the whole eastern part of the quarter really is already covered under that. My thing is really the first five blocks of Bourbon Street treated as a bar, because it is a bar. It's just a big open bar. And that's what we're trying to do. You know, having a little difficult trying to get the parties together on that. There's other ways we're looking at, you know, there's more than one way to skin the cat, as they say. So we're looking at other alternatives, you know, maybe giving the police a little more leeway on if they observe someone carrying a gun in a dangerous manner. For example, if someone has baggy sweatpants on and they have a Glock with an extended magazine sticking out the back pocket that looks like it could fall out and be a danger, then, you know, we want that policeman to be able to stop that person and prevent that. So it's a challenge. You know, that this is a conservative legislature. I'm a conservative. I'm an active hunter. I'm a big gun owner. However, I think Bourbon Street is a little bit different. You know, not many states or cities around this country have open container at all, much less a strip of blocks that has that many people that are excessively drinking in many cases. And, you know, the NOPD, for example, they picked up, I think, over 100 guns on Bourbon Street during Mardi Gras. When constitutional carry comes in, they can't do that for the most part anymore. And that's what I'm trying to solve.
What is the primary concern of detractors to your approach?
That we are limiting their gun rights. You know, that constitutional carry means constitutional carry, and there shouldn't be any carve-outs for that. So that's kind of the opposition, what we're heading up against. And we do have a bill. We're going to run it a week from today in the local municipal committee chaired by Chairman Bowie from New Orleans. So I think that's at 1 o'clock next Wednesday. So we're still working on what version that will look like. And, you know, I've consulted people in the legal arena, you know, policemen to try to help me. Try to, you know, we took away reasonable suspicion from the police when you go to constitutional carry. So normally, and Noel, correct me if I'm wrong, because you know this better than anybody, if a policeman now sees someone walking down Bourbon Street with a gun in their coat, they can stop them and say, hey, you know, do you have a permit for that? If they don't have a permit, then they're breaking the law and they can, you know, confiscate the weapon and get that gun off the street. With constitutional carry, we can't do that anymore. And I voted for constitutional carry, but I do think Bourbon Street is a different animal. You know, that's it really is an outdoor bar.
So the detractors then are not comfortable with the gun-free zones or and the exceptions to that, whether it be courthouses, municipal buildings, ABO outlets, schools, hospitals, airport. They're opposed to all of those then, right?
I can't speak for them. I mean,
they're saying that they don't want another exception because they feel like it's an infringement. You're infringing on their right to carry a gun. They really don't like any exception. I raise the point is it makes it hard to reach a compromise with a group that's of that mindset.
It is definitely harder. It's definitely difficult to make a compromise right now. And, you know, we all want to support our police. And I think this puts the police, you know, I'll ask your opinion. It makes it more dangerous for the police on Bourbon Street. I mean, the bottom line is if we don't do something, there's going to be more guns on Bourbon Street anywhere you slice it. There's going to be more guns carried by legal people, responsible people like you and I, but there's also going to be, you know, you're not going to be able to pick up the guns for the ones that shouldn't have them on Bourbon Street.
No, there's no doubt. I mean, I don't think anybody can argue that point. Obviously, I'm curious though, Kurt, whether or not it's not maybe more appropriate to say because there's an ABO exception already, excuse me, maybe we just adopt the same ambit of protection area that you have with schools of, I think it's 1,000
right.
feet, it may be 1,000 yards,
I don't
remember.
I think it's
1,000 feet. 1,000 feet around a barroom.
Well, that's one thought. And, you know, I look at what happened at Republic a week ago. If that was on Bourbon Street, how many, you know, the amount of people on that street, you know, those bullets got to land somewhere, you know, and it's not like you're being accosted in your front yard and, you know, you need to use your weapon to protect your life. And I'm all for that. But, you know, on Bourbon Street, you know, that bullet's going to hit people. And, you know, that's the compromise we're trying to strike, you know, is, you know, we want people to be able to protect themselves, but we also, I think Bourbon Street is a different animal. And I think that's a unique situation. And I think it needs to be, you know, looked at differently.
Yeah. I mean, I think your approach is spot on because the reality is that if you want proactive policing, you need to be able to give the police the tools necessary to do so. When you remove that tool, it becomes very, very difficult. There are some very unique things about Bourbon Street. So if you know, I know there are others that would want it expanded to other areas. It may make sense, but no other area makes more sense. And I think that's what you're saying than Bourbon Street.
Look at the pickpocketers. I mean, you know, if you're carrying a gun, I mean, we were down there for Mardi Gras last year and my wife had her phone pickpocketed and 8 of our friends within 5 minutes had their phones pickpocketed. You know, if you're carrying a gun just kind of haphazardly in your back pocket, you know, and that gun, you know, that's a dangerous situation. And especially if it could easily fall out or something like that. So, you know, we're looking at all kind of ways to, you know, make this better. And it's a working process. I mean, but we're going to have a bill Wednesday and we're going to run it Wednesday and hopefully we'll be successful with that.
You know, I keep hearing about other states and what they do. And when I go look at other states, there's so many nuances and circumstances surrounded these areas where they have a high concentration of individuals, high concentration of alcohol consumption, bars, live entertainment and the like, that the way that we are treating Bourbon Street right now relative to the bill that's going to go into the law that's going to go into place, what I believe July 1st or July 4th, one
right.
of those dates. It's entirely different. There's no other
it
one
is.
That squares up on all fours to what we're about to do. We are about to embark upon the most liberal approach there is of any other area in the country. And, you know, when people say, well, what about this area? They it seems to work over there. Yeah, go look at why it's working over there, because they have nuanced circumstances different than what we're going to do here.
And look, on Beale Street, and Tennessee is a red state. Tennessee is a constitutional carry state. On Beale Street, it's my understanding at dark, they wind you on Beale Street. Now, Beale Street, I think, is a lot shorter than Bourbon. You know,
sure.
a little more, maybe it's, you know, I haven't been on Beale Street in a while, so maybe that's a little easier to do. I don't know if we have the main.
My daughter went to school there, was on Beale Street probably, I don't know, 50 times. I mean, go through a magnetometer. They wand you and you go through a magnetometer, and they check bags. So
that's right. That's realistic on Bourbon. It's just so big and so.
Yeah, it probably not. You know, there's more ingresses and egresses on Bourbon than there is, you know, obviously on Beale Street. But the fact of the matter is that it's a classic example and a great, point that you're making is they've made accommodations for a lot of these things. And in other areas of Tennessee, they're parks and you can't carry weapons in parks. So they designate, other areas parks. And, you know, so
right,
there, as you said, there's more than one
state.
Way to skin a cat, but it seems as
right.
though I got to imagine they went through they had the same opposition there that we're having here, that we're trying to beat back here.
Probably. Look, Tennessee is a red state with a lot of conservative legislators, and they recognize the fact that Beale Street, that this could be a problem. And they, you can be a conservative pro-gun person and also recognize that this situation could be dangerous and maybe we need to do something to address that.
The other issue too is that historically we've had a disproportionate number, a high per capita number of gun assaults, far greater
right.
than they ever had in Tennessee.
You're and, probably right. I'm sure that's right.
And it's interesting how people just want to walk right by the obvious, stare the obvious in the face, and walk right around it.
Right.
I don't know all the reasons why that is. That's an outcome. That's the what. I don't know why. I have a pretty good idea, but it's a very complex formula, one it's going to take generations to beat back and resolve. And it seems as though we don't even want to take it into consideration when we're trying to debate this bill.
Well, and again, this bill came to my attention, or this idea, when law enforcement reached out to me. And look, I have a business on Bourbon Street, so I have a lot of experience down there. But when members of the 8th District reached out to me and said, hey, we got a problem, that's how this bill came about.
We'll be talking about it with Deputy Superintendent Nicholas Gernon at 11 o'clock. I mean, I know he went up to Baton Rouge.
I'll be listening.
I believe testified, right?
Before the
committee on Representative Alonzo Knox's bill. The reception was chilly, I guess at best is one way of putting it, right?
I think it was, but I also think that there was some good discussion, and I think that there were a lot of members of that committee that recognized the challenges that this could cause when this bill goes into effect July 4th.
Senator, let me ask you this. Not a lot of days left in this session, and if this bill doesn't start to advance, is it possible that we run out of time?
I don't think, not yet. I think we're okay. I mean, I would think after next week, this is the first step of this bill out of a 5-step process. I think after next week, you need to start worrying a little bit, but we're okay on time. We're okay on time.
Okay. Final thoughts?
I just hope that logical, cool heads can prevail here. And, I'm open to any suggestions. I have shopped this bill around for ideas with all sides, with the NRA, with district attorneys, with prosecutors, with police, to try to see, what we can do. And, I'll be working up until the 1 o'clock on Wednesday when this bill gets presented. So it's a work in process. And if you have suggestions offline, please call me. We talk all the time, and I appreciate your input and your experience in law enforcement.
Well, I appreciate you willing to receive that info. If you don't mind, I'd like to ask you one other question. Where are we on on HB 800 relative to this constitutional convention? Is this advancing? And your thoughts?
I think it's pending House floor vote. It's look, I think we need a constitutional convention. I'm undecided on whether this is the proper way to do it. I can tell you as a legislator, it's my understanding that this constitutional convention would take place in the last two or three weeks of session. That is an extremely busy time. That is a time when you've got bills everywhere. You're trying to read conference reports. You're trying to read amendments. The way the makeup of the constitutional convention is, we would not be able to meet in this building because it's 105 members of the House, 39 members of the Senate, 27 members that are appointed by the governor. So are we going to go off campus for a whole day, the last 2 weeks of session, when we're all trying to get our bills together? But I am open to it, and I'm willing to listen. I do think we need to do it. I mean, if our Constitution is outdated, it's been added on to a gazillion times. We don't have flexibility with the budget. So, we always have to cut higher ed and healthcare if when we run deficits. So there's I commend the governor for recognizing the fact that we got to do this. I'm just undecided on whether this is the proper time and vehicle to do it. But I'm keeping an open mind.
Are you comfortable with the process without any citizen involvement or representation?
A little uncomfortable. Usually, like in 1970, 72, when you did a constitutional convention, it was a much bigger deal, electing members and all that. Now, the difference between what the governor wants to propose and back in the 70s, we were rewriting the Constitution, right? We were eliminating offices. We were creating offices. We were doing a lot. What he has told us is we're really just pulling things out of the Constitution that never should be there, that should be in statute, which I totally agree with. So it is a big difference between this and what has happened in the past.
But when we say which should never be there, it's kind of an interesting perspective. The people voted on that.
They did. And
so
you're right.
How do we have such a cavalier attitude about that? And we say, well, it should have never been there.
Says who? I guess it's,
says right. Jeff Landry. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to the governor, but I mean, you have a lot of people that voted for a lot of good reasons. And I understand that it's complicated, this document. But a lot of the reasoning behind the amendments to the Constitution, it would be hard to argue that they don't still exist today, right?
Yeah, and look, things like, if they want to raise the fees for wildlife and fisheries, but they only want that to be funded from, raising the price of a hunting license. Well, we'll put that in the Constitution because we don't trust the politicians to spend their money elsewhere. Those are the kind of things that are in there that, quote unquote, should not be in there. If you look at other states' constitutions, I think it's Massachusetts has the same constitution they had when they were chartered in the, 1700s. We put things in there because we don't trust state government how to spend it. We're trying to change that perception here, and I think we're doing a good job of it. But it is a very inflexible process, and when you have to pivot and when you have to shift money here and change priorities spending wise, you simply, our hands are tied. I mean, almost all of the budget is tied up in either in the Constitution or in statute. So some of it is in statute, which we can change, but those are the things.
My biggest point, though, is how do you establish or reestablish or regain or build public trust by not allowing public participation?
It seems a little
counterintuitive to me. I mean, and that's what I'm hearing from constituents. I don't understand that.
Well, keep in mind, if we do change the Constitution, the public will have to vote on it. So the public can decide if the changes we made are acceptable or unacceptable. So, there is that process as well.
Then what?
If it fails, we go back to where we are.
I mean, look, you study politics like I do. It's hard to go past that stuff. And if it fails,
it is.
What happens then? I mean, you kind of box yourself into an all or nothing situation. Yeah, and
right.
you, and you almost eliminate the possibility of moving forward, as opposed to having a more deliberative, open, transparent, set-aside process.
Right.
I mean, I don't think anybody argues that it needs to be changed.
Right.
Why now? Why the exigency?
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Right. Well. Right. And that's where, what we have to decide as lawmakers. Is this the right time, or do we do it sometime in the summer, or do it sometime in August? And you know, that'll be that.
Well, as always, we truly appreciate your time, Senator Kirk Talbot. You've always been open and receptive, you know, to our calls, and we appreciate that as well. Have a great week, and I know y'all are busy, and thank you for your service. Alrighty, folks, that's Senator Kirk Talbot from Jefferson Parish. We will be right back, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.